You are listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of September 14th, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Community celebrations sparkle. Vermont forests, threats and opportunities. And Londonderry to vote on cannabis sales.
A vote on whether the town of Londonderry should allow the retail sale of cannabis within the town has been postponed until October 20th because a public notice requirement will not be able to be met. According to a press release from the Londonderry Town Office, the legal warning and notice for the special town meeting was properly posted on the town's website and various public locations within the community, but it was not, and at this point cannot be published in the newspaper of record at least 5 days before the meeting as prescribed by Vermont law. The town's newspaper of record, which must be authorized by the select board annually, is the Vermont Journal. The vote has now been rescheduled for October 20th, and a public informational meeting will be held on October 13th. If voters in Londonderry give a thumbs up to allowing retail cannabis sales in town, following the vote now rescheduled for October 20th, that would pave the way for allowing such businesses to open a year later, in October of 2022. Before the postponement of the vote originally planned for this Friday, September 17th, town officials held two informational meetings, on August 31st and September 8th. A no vote would mean the town has opted out of allowing such sales of cannabis. If the town, along with other communities who have yet to hold such votes on this question, do nothing and hold no vote at all, they are assumed to have opted in under the state legislation legalizing such cannabis sales that became law in October 2020. A no vote on the cannabis question on October 20th doesn't preclude the possibility of a subsequent vote to revisit the question. The vote on the cannabis question will also include a separate article on whether to add Londonderry to the list of towns which have a 1% local option tax. Currently, several neighboring communities, including Brattleboro, Dover, Manchester, Rutland, Stratton, and Windhall, also have a local option tax. In Londonderry, that would not extend to rooms, meals, or alcohol sales, which are special categories under the local option tax law. During the information meeting that was held Wednesday, September 8th, at the Town Hall, Select Board Chairman Tom Cavanaugh described what was in play with the vote that at that point was scheduled for September 17th.
While the Select Board does not take a stand on how Londonderry's voters should decide on these articles, the following is information that should assist them. Article 1, Retail Cannabis Vote. A yes vote on retail cannabis would mean that retail sales of cannabis would be allowed in town starting October 2022. In order to open a retail cannabis store, business owners will have to acquire a state permit. Each permit will be valid for only one type of the business and conform with the town zoning rules. Retail cannabis stores will bring in new customers to town, both from neighboring towns as well as tourists. Many of those who come to town to shop at a retail cannabis store, if one opens in town, could potentially also visit other businesses in town, which could generate new revenue for the local economy. A no vote would mean that retail cannabis stores would not be allowed in town. However, that does not mean another vote cannot happen in the future. The Select Board can call for another vote in the future, or a petition with signatures of 5% of the registered voters in town could trigger another vote.
Much of the questions from the audience and the discussion afterwards centered around the local option tax proposal and what that would mean.
My wife said we're new to Londonderry, we're now residents here. But we've lived in four other states over the last 30 years. And what we've seen over those 30 years in those four other states is slowly increase taxes, increase budgets, increase spending, and always starting at one level and ending up at another level. When we started in New Jersey, I don't care either, but they had no income tax, now it's 10%. The point is here, 1%, they say it's only 1%. And I'm also in finance, and I can tell you, you have no idea, unless you've done some studies and projections, how much revenues you're going to get from online sales. You have no idea how much I spend online, or he does, or anyone else. It could be thousands. I know it's many thousands for us. That's not the point. And what commitment the board is making is where those revenues can be, where they'll be allocated, especially if they're hundreds of times more than you think, because it may well be.
It will go to offset property taxes.
Directly? Reduce the tax rate?
Yes.
Because that's not clear in the report.
It says it will go into the general fund, which goes in as a revenue, which offsets the expenses.
And if you get $500,000, this is a question, will it go to reduce the tax rate, or might you build another town hall?
It will go to relieve the tax rate.
That should be specific.
Select board members and other town officials who spoke to the question pointed out that without the local option tax, the town would gain no economic benefit from allowing cannabis sales locally. They have estimated that the town could realize about $111,000 in new tax revenue from sales from existing brick-and-mortar locations, and that did not include online sales or cannabis sales. Revenue from the local option tax would be transferred into the town's general fund, with an eye towards offsetting local property taxes. An earlier version of our report on the meeting incorrectly stated that the $111,000 figure included online and cannabis sales, but that is not the case. At this point, there is no way to know what the cannabis revenue sales might be.
Expensive. We got roads we have to pave. It's about $200,000 for a mile of road to repave. I mean, these roads are never going to get paved fully the way we go, because we don't have the money. Well, that's why we want to raise property taxes, and we try not to. I mean, this year, this budget, we tried our best to cut wherever we could because we knew everyone was hurting because of COVID.
Last year, we as a board, we bared down hard on the town budget. We did a lot of things that places, you know, even in Weston or Manchester wouldn't consider, to keep our budget down, keep tax rates down, because that is a primary concern for us.
Barry Randell was one town resident who expressed concerns about the proposed increase in the sales tax and where that revenue might eventually go.
But mostly, how the 1% local tax is going to be used. And I want it to be clear that it is used exclusively to reduce the property tax, because otherwise if it goes into the general fund and is used for other purposes, then it's not doing anything to reduce the tax liability. And Vermont already is the fourth highest property tax state in the country, so we don't need to pay any more property taxes.
Voters who requested an early or absentee ballot for the September 17th vote will be mailed a ballot for the newly worn vote as soon as possible, possibly as early as next week. Those who had not yet requested a ballot may do so at any time by contacting the town clerk's office. For the GNOW TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. A little rain didn't seem to dampen the spirit and readiness to celebrate making it through the pandemic and other assorted challenges presented by the past 18 months or so to residents of Arlington, Sunderland, and Sandgate, who turned out at the Arlington Rec Park on Saturday, August 28th, for a little bit of fun, music, free food, socializing, and at the beginning of the picnic, some awards and recognition to several local businesses, organizations, and individuals who had stepped up over the past year to help keep things moving forward. The awards ceremony got the event started, and Don Keelan of Arlington, whose family foundation helped organize and put on the picnic and ceremony, described its purpose.
A number of years ago, back in 1941, when the London Blitz was over, Winston Churchill made a speech to the people of the United Kingdom. In that speech, he mentioned, "We are at the end of the beginning." And I must say, we here today, what we have gone through, are basically at the end of the beginning. And to get us through that beginning, we have those these folks on our left here who represent about 35 to 40 organizations in town, nonprofits, government agencies, businesses, and individuals who kept open, serviced us, took care of us, and watched us during this awful time. Each one will receive the following walnut plaque with a brass statement on it. The statement reads, and by the way, this is being given in all of our names to these organizations who stayed open during the pandemic and took care of us. For the services you provided to the citizens of Arlington, Sunderland, and Sandgate, Vermont during the COVID-19 pandemic of 2020-21, our thanks, our gratitude, and our deep appreciation, August 28, 2021.
Awards were then handed out to a variety of local organizations.
The Arlington Food Shelf. The Arlington Fire Department, who are currently over there cooking. Oh, good, Randy, you took a break. The Arlington Lions Club, the town of Sunderland, Southwest Vermont Medical Center, Stewart's.
Special awards were made to Keith and Donna Squires for their long service on town boards, and also to Colonel James Baker and Dr. and Mrs. James Fitzgerald and their family foundation, as well as to four area legislators. Colonel Baker, who helped to lead the Arlington Renewal Project and is currently serving as the state's commissioner for the Department of Corrections, gave us his take on the community picnic.
Well, I think, you know, it's been a long 18 months with COVID and the challenges that came along with that. People haven't been out and about, and this is an opportunity for the town to come together, do a celebration, and get together. And I think it was a smash.
Afterwards, a co-ed soccer game between the Arlington alumni and the present Arlington boys and girls soccer team was held, with the alumni emerging with a 4-3 victory. A fireworks display capped the evening off. The day before, Manchester held what was to have been the second of two street fairs after last year's events were canceled due to COVID concerns. But the one originally planned for late July had to be canceled also due to a heavy summer rainstorm. The second one, held Friday, August 27th, became the first street fair since 2019 and featured the Don't Leave Band and the familiar street vendors and community booths that have made this event a local favorite since they began about 10 years ago. The pandemic may not be over just yet. Both community events showed what life used to be like and where it's hopefully headed back to again. For the GNOW TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Vermont, the Green Mountain State, is almost synonymous with forests and woodlands. The verdant mountains and ridgelines go a long way towards helping form the state's identity and a sense of itself, along with dairy farms, maple syrup, ski resorts, and a few other things. But the overwhelming majority of land in Vermont is forests, and much of it is relatively new growth. Preserving it and nurturing its health so it remains a source of outdoor recreational opportunities, for logging opportunities, and a source of timber and wood products and wood chips, along with preserving its scenic beauty and maintaining it as an important carbon sink to absorb carbon emissions as the struggle with climate change becomes more pressing, was the topic of a recent discussion held at the Park House at the Manchester Recreation Park, organized by the Bennington County Regional Commission. How to keep the forests healthy and performing all their functions was explained and described by Michael Snyder, the commissioner of the Vermont Department of Forests, Parks, and Recreation, and Eric Sorensen, an ecologist with the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department.
I think the forest economy is a value chain. Think of it as starting with the forest and then forest landowners. These are the elements of that chain. forest landowner, forester, logger, trucker, receiving mill, like a sawmill or a pellet mill or a firewood processor or a chip producer, and then secondary manufacturing, the boards that come from a sawmill, they go to a manufacturing plant and get made into cabinetry or flooring, right? So, or many other products. Energy wood coming off and going in to make electricity. We have two wood-fired biomass electric plants supporting the grid in the state with baseload power, Ragged Power Station, Burlington Electric. And then we have thermal applications of wood energy. A third of Vermont school children go to schools heated by wood. We're a national leader in that regard. Our Capitol complex is heated by wood. This is a great story. We don't tend to talk about it, but it's really connecting that instead of dead dinosaurs from halfway around the world pulled up from deep below, we're using a renewable source that puts local, you know, our neighbors to work while heating our buildings. So these are all elements of that value chain, which are the value adders that we tend to kind of lump all into one. I want you to understand that it's really, it's amazing the diversity of products that come from our forests all over the world. Forests are active, they're dynamic, they're functional, and that's really how to know forests, is by what they do. And we signaled in 2015 that what they do for us is really threatened. And we wrote a report and concluded that livable communities, functional natural systems, and the quality of life rely on maintaining large blocks of contiguous forests across Vermont's landscape and a viable modern forest economy. Not just hacking away at the woods, but actually thinking about it, applying adaptive, climate smart, modern ecological silviculture, and a modern workforce, a modern marketplace to produce world-class durable forest products, energy products, et cetera. There's a real bright future that's possible, but we're not set up to achieve that future. And that's what we need to focus on. So we put that out years ago, and we're still talking about it. We still actually haven't, we've chipped away a variety of the buckets of policy areas that we recommended. But I'm really starting to get a little nervous that we're just kind of spinning around, rearranging chairs in the Titanic here. The idea being that what we do now will have an influence on Vermont's forests for years to come. And I really do think that it's not a Chicken Little moment, but it's kind of like, hey, let's be smart. We really have a chance to get it right. And not everybody does. It's really true.
Just look through those. Mike's mentioned all of these. In a forested state, the forests are our ecology, they're our society, they're the places we recreate, they're the places we get products, and they're places that we have peace of mind. So they range across the spectrum of features. I wanted to show just sort of a, sorry that this ends in Canada, it doesn't include Canada, but I wanted to just show you sort of a snapshot of what forests look like in our area. And for this and the next three slides, the colors just indicate areas of forests or any other natural cover. So you can see the Finger Lakes are in there and Lake Champlain are there too. But these are chunks of forest and other natural habitat that are over 20 acres. And I'm just gonna go up in size. And I want you to just look at the pattern of change. So over 500 acres, you can see there's not much left in the Champlain Valley. And most of northern New York disappears other than the Finger Lakes. There's over 2,000 acres and the Adirondacks. What's this? Is this is that the Catskills? Where are we? No, Catskills are here, aren't they?
Yeah, Allegheny.
Allegheny, thanks. And these are those cool ridges in Pennsylvania and northern Maine. And then if you go over 5,000 acres, we're down to, and this isn't the forest, that's the Quabbin Reservoir. So you get a picture of what's left. And if you think about how important forests are, most of the things we associate with forests, we associate with large expanses of it, whether it's operability or landowners that are able to work their land, or whether it's wildlife and their ability to move. So that picture of large chunks of forest is sort of a framing element to me on how we think about what the issue, one of the issues is. These are the threats to that. And you can look through those. The only one I want to talk about separately is the last one, because of how different it is now, that it's happening so quickly compared to the last times we've had climate change. But, and it's having these direct effects of things like species moving north, but there are these compounding effects too of people are, has anybody noticed how many people are moving to Vermont and buying property? There's an increase in the population, which, you know, I like people, but there's a threat there to loss of habitat and fragmentation of forest. And they're moving here because of how nice it is, you know, that we have lots of water, unlike the arid Southwest, and that we don't flood like Long Island. And again, nothing wrong with those places, but those are the places that are experiencing problems, and places like Vermont, and I've seen Minnesota also called out as, you know, lots of water, lots of greenery, and nice people too. So it's a compounding threat of climate change.
For a deeper dive into some of the issues involving Vermont forests, GNAT made a video recording of the entire presentation, and you can find it on one of our TV channels or on our website at gnat-tv.org. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.